open a public hearing on House Bill 2526 and call Representative Bueller and good senator, please.
All yours, Representative.
Okay. Short here.
Yeah, I know.
Have to get the right height. Well, thank you, Chair Barker, esteemed members of the committee. For the record, my name is Newt Bueller. I'm representative for House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And I am starting off your committee today with a pretty simple bill. It's House Bill 2526 with the -1 amendments. And it's simple because it simply directs the Oregon Health Authority to establish a suicide prevention education program. And create the educational materials to go along with it and provide it to gun dealers to display at the point of sale. And importantly, participation in this program for gun dealers is voluntary. That's why the -1 amendments are there. The -1 amendments, besides making it voluntary for gun dealers, also switches the program away from the Department of Justice in creating these materials to what we think is more appropriate, and that's the Oregon Health Authority. Now, let me give you a little bit of background here. Suicide is really a growing and devastating public health problem in Oregon. 762 fellow Oregonians in 1 year in 2015 lost their life because of suicide in this state. And that loss is devastating for families and leaves a lot of empty tables and hearts, or a lot of empty chairs and hearts. Empty chairs at the dinner table, in the classrooms, at the office, and important conversations. And importantly, a very, very frequently missed statistics is that 83% of gun-related deaths in Oregon is attributable to suicide. And over 41,000 people die every year from suicide in the United States. Although we tend to ignore it when it's self-inflicted, violence of all forms is really tragic and tears families and communities across the state apart. We are really serious. If we're really serious about stopping gun-related violence and healing our wounds, we really need to focus on our mental health system in preventing suicides. Now, fortunately, we don't have to reinvent the wheel because there's been a very successful program that was started in New Hampshire and started by the gun shop owners in New Hampshire. And this is really the inspiration of House Bill 2526. And I encourage you to look at it. We'll submit the website. It's a very innovative program where the gun shop owners in New Hampshire recognize this problem with regards to suicide. And they created materials that is voluntarily given out at the point of sale. Now, why this is so important is that a recent study in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that the risk of suicide is 50 times higher 1 week after buying a handgun. So if you really want to make an impact, that's the time to really educate people. And this material that's given out in New Hampshire and now over half the states in the U.S. provides information with regards to warning signs, how to get treatment for depression, and who to call if you feel like you need some help. So, colleagues, I encourage you to help us solve this problem. We can't afford to have so many empty chairs at our dinner tables, at our place of work. We need to solve this problem, and this is one small step in terms of education and taking a good public health approach to this problem. So with that, I will hand it over to my good colleague, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Representative Bueller. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate District 17. And I'm honored to be here with my colleague, Representative Bueller, talking about this important bill. I want to be clear with you, colleagues. This is not a gun bill. This is a mental health bill. And I think it's really important to make that distinction. Yes, we're talking about the part of suicide where people use guns as a ways of committing it. And yes, we're focusing on that because, as Representative Bueller pointed out, guns are involved in so many suicides, both in Oregon and nationally. But it's not about guns. It's about helping people have information they need to stay healthy. And some people might say that we're weakening it with the -1s by changing it from shall to may. But we think it's really important to give gun owners, gun shops, the opportunity to do the right thing. We believe the vast majority of them will want to do the right thing, and we always think it's better not to impose more than we have to. We'd rather provide the material, give them the option, and make that clear. And then if it turns out it doesn't pick up as fast as we like, then we can reconsider. But it's always better to start programs on a voluntary way. Moving it to the health authority is the right thing to do because this is a mental health issue, and the health authority is the place to provide those materials. As a family physician, I know all too well the tragedy of suicide, the risks that are associated with it, and the simple measures that can be taken by families and friends when they're concerned that a loved one may be at risk for committing suicide, the simple ways that we can keep guns accessible for appropriate people and inaccessible to people who are at risk of self-harm. And so it's a real pleasure for me to sit here and talk with you about this really important issue and to engage in a conversation that we hope will reduce substantially the risk of suicide by guns in Oregon just by giving information. It's simply about giving information, nothing more, nothing less. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions? So I have one on the 762 suicides. Do you know how many of those were by firearms?
762, and I believe that over 50% were by firearms, 54% if I remember it.
Thank you. And I'll make a comment. I'd like to thank you for, Representative, for making it voluntary because there's different kind of gun dealers that I know one who does internet sales, and so they go to a gun dealer where the gun is purchased, and he wouldn't be handing them out. He very seldom has person-to-person contact, and the requirement would have made that difficult. Yes.
Can I just make one other comment that I meant to
yes,
mention?
Yes, please.
I know that there are Dash 2s in OLIS as well that talk about doing a study. I'm absolutely supportive, and with the national ban on the CDC doing research on gun violence, the states have an important role to play. I would not, however, want to see this bill derailed by a large fiscal. So I'm hoping that the health authority will find it within the scope of their current budget to do this, or that Oregon Health and Science University can participate in ways that don't put a big fiscal on this bill, or any fiscal at all, if at all possible, because I'm very reluctant to have an important public health measure like this bill derailed by a large fiscal. I think if we want to do that, we can look at it separately, but I'm reluctant to derail it with a big fiscal, even though I support the intent of the Dash 2s sure. very strongly.
Especially since this program is already well established in over 25 states in the United States and know that it's successful. So studying it, I really don't understand why it would be that impactful. So.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, Representative Olson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So either one of you doctors, I'm just curious, what's your thoughts on inviting some of the gun ownership, the responsible folks on wanting to help craft the direction of the study with OHA on this?
I'd be very supportive of that. In fact, the American Society for Suicide Prevention has done that with their materials. They've engaged with a lot of hunting advocacy groups and gun shop owners and created a very nice material already done, actually, and it's out there. So I think that's a great suggestion.
Thank you.
Williamson.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify the intent of the Dash 2 is not to study the program that has happened in other states, but rather to study suicide by firearm in Oregon.
That was my understanding, and I absolutely agree, Representative Williamson, as you and I have spoken, with the intent of that, and I just want to be sure that we don't mess up an otherwise good bill with a large fiscal, yep. especially in this budget climate. So just wanted to put that on the record.
Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Barker. And before I get into my serious question, I appreciated Rick Greenlick. You guys missed it because his mic was to the side about having a paradox here.
Times already.
Yes. Three times? How many times?
At least three.
Three this year. Well, I appreciated it.
We anyway, appreciate it, too.
But on to the more serious note here. I understand you're trying to model based off of other states and so forth. And I also understand that firearms are, I'm looking at, you know, all the different methods typically used for suicide, and by far it's way at the top. You know, the next being suffocation, hanging, and poisoning. Have we done anything similar to this for other things such as prescription medications, things that people OD on, and providing that sort of information in those areas as well?
Good question. I don't think it would be nearly as impactful since the large number of suicides are due to guns. And then that important study that just came out this year in the New England Journal of Medicine that said that the risk of suicide is over 50 times higher, 50 times higher 1 week after buying a handgun.
Right.
So I doubt there would be anywhere else that you'd have that kind of impact in terms of education and providing help to people than at the time of a gun purchase.
If I may, Mr. Chair, just add something on. Representative Stark, I appreciate the value of your question, and I would point out that materials that are given out by pharmacists, for example, with drugs that are at risk for overdose, do include warnings about how to store them safely and keep them out of the hands. But in general, while suicide is always at some level an impulsive act, generally speaking, when people plan for it over long periods of time, that's when they're more likely to use prescription drugs, whereas when they want a method that they think is likely to happen quickly and when it's fairly easy to purchase a gun, that's why the 50% the risk is 50 times higher in that first week after purchasing a handgun. So if we can just give people information during that very vulnerable period when they're most in the thrall of the impulse for self-harm, then that's why we think we have a window, a teachable moment there, and that it's different from the ones where we see it with suffocation or hanging or poisonings.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to say thank you to both of you. I appreciate the work you've done. Representative Buehler and I chatted in the hallway today about this. I appreciate that where you're going with this is the mental health issue. Violence is violence, and you said that kind of, and I think, in a way, and I really appreciate that. I'm not sure I am there yet with where this is, but I really appreciate the conversation and where you're going with this, and I understand it. And I guess that it's really not a question, but just thanking you for thinking this way. It's outside the box, and I love outside the box thinking. And both of you worked very hard on this, and I just really appreciate it. But at this point, it's still something that I would struggle with in a lot of ways, which I won't go into. But one of the things that I'm having a problem with is I'm not very trusting the Oregon Health Authority for a lot of reasons, which I won't go into today. And that was a main heartburn for me right away. So I just want you to know that, put that on the record.
Chair, can I comment? I think Representative Olson, and I appreciate your comments and perspective. I think Representative Olson had actually a really good suggestion that we have gun shop owner representation or advocates help develop that material, because I do think it has to be something that connects, that everyone feels comfortable with and have that approach to it. So OHA has to have that kind of input.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Post, your points well taken, and I would put on the record that if there are already well-designed materials from the American Society for Suicide Prevention that were developed in consultation with hunting associations and things like that, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. There may be the need to add some Oregon-specific information to it, and that would be important. But I would hope and expect that the health authority wouldn't reinvent the wheel here, and that they would, in fact, use existing materials that have been developed by an organization that has very explicit expertise in this arena, rather than develop materials de novo. There's no need for that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to hesitate just and call Representative Items here. So what do you think? And I'm going to temporarily, just for a few moments, close the hearing on this bill and open it. Hearing on House Bill 3266, and Representative Bynum, please, and Representative Olson.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 3266 prohibits any person from using a mechanical restraint, chemical restraint, prone restraint, physical restraint, or seclusion on students in public education program, and it provides an exception for police officers. There's a dash 4 amendment, which is up on OLIS, which prohibits the use of restraints unless it is a police officer, counselor, or juvenile community supervision officer, and the mechanical restraint is necessary due to a reasonable threat of imminent physical injury.
Thank you. Please.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, my name is Janelle Bynum, and I'm the state representative for House District 51 here in Oregon. I had originally prepared testimony, and I threw it all out because As a mom, I'm always thinking about how can I advocate for our children the best, and I don't think my original proposal was very clear about its intent. So I redid it as I was standing there. House Bill 3266 is before you today as a step forward in addressing our attendance, achievement, and high school graduation metrics. My goal in bringing forth the bill is to make schools safe places for children and to challenge our current practices or allowed practices when children are in our care. House Bill 3266 limits the use of restraints on children in Oregon schools because I believe our schools need to be safe places for students, somewhere they're excited to be, not somewhere they feel apprehension. 3266 with the dash 4 amendments moves us towards that goal, building on the current statute ORS 339.288. To specify that the described prohibition of restraints does apply to police officers, counselors, or juvenile community supervision officers. It's worth noting that the bill allows these employees to use restraints should the youth present an imminent threat of physical injury to themselves or others. I want to be very clear that I am in support of our police officers as they put themselves at risk every day, day in and day out, to protect our communities, and this bill is in no way meant to chastise or endanger them. Rather, it's meant to codify this policy so that restraints in our schools are used as a last resort. So one of the things, as we've been going through developing the policy, one of the things that surprised me was the different communities who saw the potential impact for this bill. I wasn't aware of it, but advocates for students with disabilities had a deep interest. Educators, law enforcement, as well as the civil rights community all have weighed in. What was beginning to emerge was that we needed to have a broader conversation about the needs of our children, how we treat our children in school, and how each group can have input into the outcomes we want to see. So let me tell you a little story about an employee that I had. We'll just call her D. She was arrested at work because she was fighting at the mall. And for the record, the mall is not the place to fight. Her family and the victim's family actually worked through an amicable resolution, and they thought everything was done. But then out of the blue, the Portland police showed up at my store and arrested her. She was a good kid who made a poor choice. She worked at our store not because she thought it was fun necessarily, even though we think it's fun, but she really needed the money. And what I wanted for her and all the kids that I employ is for them to graduate high school. She wanted to become a member of law enforcement, actually. So I went to court on her behalf. I accepted collect calls on her behalf. I wrote letters. I arranged a new work site with her supervisory officer. I talked to her mom. I did everything I could to make sure that she was released, that she had some supervision, she had community support, that she would be successful. But she refused to come back to work. And she refused to come back to work when I finally got a chance to sit down and look at her face to face, eye to eye. She said, "I was arrested at work, and everybody remembers that. I can't go back there," even though I moved her to a different location. It was heartbreaking to me because she was throwing away an opportunity, but it was real. And so what I'm seeing now, even with my 13-year-old son, is that embarrassment for teenagers is real. And it causes them to make decisions for themselves that just aren't realistic to us as adults, but they're real to them. My 15-year-old daughter also, she can attest to anxiety around riding TriMet. And you may know that TriMet, which is the transportation district in the Portland metro area, has just recently scaled back its enforcement of fare issues. And she rode the bus and the train for 3 years, but she was always very nervous about her phone dying. She didn't want to be accosted by the fare inspectors, and she can point them out to this day from a mile away. She was constantly seeing people accosted and arrested for riding the train without a fare. And so what I share with you today is that it is the association with the place and the event that has me focused on this issue about shackling, about handcuffing children in schools. I contend that schools should be safe places for all children, and I want to underscore that this is about the kids. It's not about the adults. So I wanted to also give you an update and let you know that Representative Olson agreed to help me have that broader conversation. Civil rights advocates wanted to address also some issues, And I think that it would also be wise to make sure that the families of children who have disabilities have a chance to be heard. So we'll be working in the interim, and just wanted to offer Representative Olson a chance to show his support as well.
Okay, I support it.
Wow, short and sweet.
Hey, thank you. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, Andy Olson, the state representative out of Albany. I really appreciate Representative Bynum, where she's at, her willingness to listen to an issue. You know, we had a great conversation Saturday, and this morning we talked a little bit further about her thoughts on where this should really go. We have a commitment from the Chiefs and the Sheriff's Association. Haven't talked with the state police yet, but I'm sure they'd welcome to be involved in this discussion, but that we would craft legislation that would hit the ground running come 2018 that addresses some of the concerns that Representative Bynum have, specifically around the issue of the description that she gave with one of her employees. I mean, look, we all care about families. She cares about her family. She's extended her family, goes toward work, community policing. Your best community policing reaches out to the community, and it becomes a family issue as well. So we have that commitment, and looking forward, Mr. Chair, to get there.
Thank you, and I appreciate the effort both of you are making on this, especially. It's a great bill. You know, we're ready to move it, and for the fact that you'd reach back out to make it a little broader is really appreciated. Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bynum, I really appreciate what you're working on with Representative Olson. I don't know if this really came to light to me over the weekend, this Sunday's Statesman Journal article. There's not a whole lot I can say because my wife is a special ed teacher and has been for 30 years, and there's things she cannot have me say. But I've seen the scars on her. And so my first reaction to this was, I want to help, and I think we've got to involve the teachers union. We've got to talk to teachers, even though they'll probably not be willing to talk because they're scared to death of being sued by a parent. And I haven't heard any discussion about the teachers. There, you know, one of the quotes that amazed me was, one of the teachers said this, "We should not come to work and be punching bags." So it's a last desperate thing that they do to restrain and or put in the seclusion room, a last desperate measure, and these teachers are testifying to this here, and I wish they would have come here and testified for this bill, because I think we can get there. I think there's somewhere we can go with this, but as one who has, she comes home sometimes, and I wanna make sure that my wife, the teacher, is protected.
Mr. Chair, both my parents were teachers. My father was a special education teacher, and that's why and he came home with stories all the time. And he would often take leave because of the stress, and he knew that you could never put your hands on children. And so that's why I mentioned I was actually quite surprised that my bill wasn't aimed at the disability community. I did not know that this was an issue in terms of restraints. I'm not from Oregon, and so children being handcuffed in schools who have disabilities is quite shocking to me. My goal actually was more focused towards the schools being the place that law enforcement felt like they knew they could get them. And so they were using schools as warehouses to apprehend students and the trauma that that imposed on the students themselves as well as the people who are accused of crime. So yes, they are invited to a broader conversation so that we can perhaps come to some really good resolution, but thank you for offering that.
Just to follow up, thank you. Because once I dug into and saw where your intention was, yeah. So I would really like to, I've told Representative Olson, I'd like to tell you, I'd really like to help with this if I can, just from my family's background and your family's background. I'd love to help out on this.
My pleasure, thank you.
Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow up on what Representative Post has been saying. My daughter is a recently retired third grade teacher and points out the problem with mainstreaming kids that are right now are emotionally disturbed kids. and are in complete terror. And administration, it seems, has over-interpreted the ability to hold a child when they're trying to stab you with the scissors and are running up and down the hall screaming at people and causing damage. So I think handcuffing and shackling kids in school is a terrible idea. But I think we also need to be careful that we don't provide legislation that can be misinterpreted easily and trying to do what's right in the school. It's not an easy task anymore to be in a, it used to be so nice to be in a K-8 school when I was there before the invention of reading and writing. It was a lot easier, but now life's tougher. I think having teachers involved in this discussion is really an important thing. I definitely agree.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to close the hearing on House Bill 3266. We won't be taking any additional testimony since the bill is not moving today. And we're going to go back to House Bill 2526 and call Paul Kemp, Tom O'Connor, and Nancy Petter Warner, maybe? Wamser? You have to require handwriting before they sign up. This bill has changed in that it's going to be voluntary and health authority will provide the script. But anyway, please go ahead. We have a lot of bills. I appreciate if you keep it timely. Anybody go ahead in any order.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom O'Connor, for the record, and I'm with Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership. I will keep it brief. Our organization is all about gun safety and educational promotion of gun safety, safe storage, child access prevention. Anything that can be done, you know, in this arena, we're happy to work with the people that are doing it. The suggestion that we might have is that we think it might be a good idea to broaden this. We like the idea of the health authority. They've got a lot of good materials. So does ODFW. So do a number of gun owner organizations. So do a number of gun safety organizations. We'd hope that also in broadening it, that you look at something else besides just the point of sale where someone goes out and buys a gun then turns around and unfortunately commits suicide. Another great source, another terrible source of weapons that are used in suicide is just when they're in the home and they're unsecured. And any kind of educational material that we can develop that encourages gun owners in the home to keep their guns locked, their ammunition stored separately, their whole range of things, safes and gun locks that can be used, a lot of good material out there that I think we could use. We'd like to, our suggestion would be if whether this be done over the interim or through a study committee or however, that bring as many people to the table as possible and look at all those aspects.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Paul Kemp. I'm with Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership, and I was here just to speak in support of this bill. I guess one of the things, our family was affected by gun violence about 4 years ago, and the day of that shooting, we had a volunteer there that assisted our family that evening, and I found that incredibly helpful. And since then, I've become a volunteer with that group, and we are dispatched by 911 to go to homes where there's been some traumatic event, most often a death. In the last year and a half, I've responded to 8 suicides. 4 suicides were by gun. Out of the 40-plus calls that I've gone on, those are by far the worst, mostly because of the family who discovered their family member who had committed suicide are absolutely traumatized by the scene that they find. I've heard many times that they didn't even know they had a gun. Other times, they knew they had a gun, but they had no idea they were considering this. Um, there aren't enough. I think if there were suicide prevention materials available at point of sale or other easy access to that, it might alert other family members to look for signs of someone who is considering suicide. Oftentimes it's a pretty impulsive decision. Easy access to a gun will allow you to act on that impulse versus other methods of suicide. And unfortunately, suicide by gun is, I think, over 85% effective. I think the last thing is, I agree with Tom, I think a broader discussion, bringing more people to the table, law enforcement, I think educators, Oregon Health Authority, and other medical professionals that deal with attempted suicides, people that don't succeed with it, or deal with family members who have succeeded and they're following up on the trauma of that suicide. I think all those folks should be brought to the table and get a better understanding of this. The majority of gun deaths in this country are suicides every year. Another aspect, and I don't know whether, you know, veterans groups would be interested. Unfortunately, our veterans groups are represented very highly in gun suicides, and I think that's an underserved community that we could do more for. And I guess lastly, oftentimes choosing a gun to commit suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem, and it's an impulsive decision that children, teens, and adults make. So I think more prevention measures on our part would go a long way. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Nancy Potter Wamser. I'm a native Oregonian. I live in Multnomah County. I'm here on my own behalf. I am a licensed Oregon marriage and family therapist, so I'm here speaking as a mental health care professional. And my main concern is with the notion of shifting from requiring the gun dealers to make this information available to a permissive approach. I really appreciate the comments of Representative Bueller and Representative Steiner Hayward about the great need to provide education. And I appreciated especially Representative Bueller's comments that we need to be really serious about this and that this is an epidemic. And in my professional judgment, treating an epidemic in a permissive manner, hoping for the best, with the notion that if we don't have a good outcome, I think Representative Steiner Hayward said we could reconsider later, perhaps, moving to a mandatory approach. But the only way one would move to that mandatory approach would be by later realizing how many preventable deaths had occurred. The other point I'd like to make is that there are really two ways that suicide happens by firearms, and I certainly agree that it's an impulsive act, but one population intends to commit suicide. There is a group of people who really suffer with emotional dysregulation. They don't necessarily intend to take their own life. They intend to cause some kind of harm to get attention. These are, in my view, some of the most tragic suicides. They're preventable. They often are prevented because the means used are not lethal. But when you have a gun, when a gun is used in this kind of acting out, you're almost certain to have the tragic outcome of a suicide or someone who is completely disabled for the rest of their life. I think it's too important for us to look for a balancing, which I guess is what is being suggested with the idea of moving from mandatory to permissive sharing of information. And I guess the last quick point is I couldn't tell for sure, but I thought I heard the suggestion that this would impose some kind of burden because there would be a requirement that the dealers face-to-face share or distribute information. As I read this proposed legislation, it simply requires that the materials be posted or made available in some conspicuous location and that the gun dealer share that location and the availability of that information with the purchaser. So I really strongly urge you to step back from any idea of loosening the approach to this epidemic by making it a permissive approach, but that you really focus on following through on what Representative Bueller suggests we need to do. Get really serious about this and impose the very slight requirement that the gun dealers provide this information without leaving it up to their discretion. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just say, Nancy, that there's a lot of gun dealers, a huge variety of that kind of business. I worked with people who had dealers' licenses who only sold to other people who they really knew closely, like personal friends,
and they got the license so they could do it legally and make all their correct things. And so some of those, there's another friend of mine does auction, online auction, deals through dealers, all legitimate, federally, highly regulated. So I don't know who he would show it to, because he sends, for example, if you bought something from him, it would go to a gun dealer near your house. You would go to that gun dealer to pick it up. So there's a variety of dealers, and that's one of the reasons we didn't want to make it mandatory, to allow the flexibility in that. And well, Representative Bueller was saying most of the gun dealers in New Hampshire liked it and did hand that information out. So it just, well, again, the people complain about being overregulated about a lot of things. So
I appreciate that, but that was the point, I think, that might have been overlooked here, that when we're looking at this as a regulatory scheme, the burden imposed is fairly slight, because it doesn't even require that the material be handed over or delivered. It simply requires that it be available and conspicuous, and that the purchaser be told, here it is, whether that's online in some fashion or in the front of the store.
Questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you. Next, I'll call Marge Easley and Penny Okamoto.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marge Easley, and I'm with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I am here to support HB 2526, at least the concept, and I have been following the discussion with great interest. We believe that this program would be an effective component of a coordinated effort to reduce the number of suicides in Oregon. And we commend the intent and the idea of this effort, because Oregon has the distinction of having one of the highest rates of suicide in the nation, and firearms do play a significant role. And we believe that this could be one component of a comprehensive public health approach. I wanted to bring to your attention the effort of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has already collaborated with the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Since August of 2016, there is now, and the Shooting Sports Foundation is the firearms industry trade group, have already developed such a program of suicide prevention in collaboration. It has already been tested in Alabama, Kentucky, Missouri, and New Mexico, and is now being rolled out across the nation with the goal of stopping nearly 10,000 deaths in the next decade. They are designed to educate gun dealers on the risk factors and warning signs of suicide, as well as to provide firearm safety advice for family members of those in crisis. And so we urge you to also look at that program as an existing program that has already been rolled out. It probably would be easy to use existing materials, either these or other materials that already are in existence. So we would recommend that you not have an expenditure to develop new materials, but to use existing materials. And this program looks very, very promising. So the League urges a yes vote on this measure, but we ask that there be some careful consideration given as to what materials are used. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Barker. Really appreciate this opportunity. I'm Penny Okamoto. I'm the Executive Director of Ceasefire Oregon, and we're here today about Bill HB 2526. We applaud Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward and Representative Newt Bueller for taking action on the very high rate of suicide, especially in rural Oregon, but throughout Oregon. But we are disappointed with the Dash 1 amendment changing the bill from shall provide to may provide. For the record, the rate of firearm suicide in some rural Oregon counties is 13, 14, and 15 per 100,000. In Multnomah County, it is 6.4 per 100,000. So the firearm suicide rates of 13, 14, 15 per 100,000. to give you an idea of how that is, of what that means, Chicago's homicide firearm rate is 16 per 100,000. So it's very, very high, and in some cases it's twice as much as in Multnomah County. Oregon Health Authority has excellent information about suicide prevention, but in addition, the New Hampshire Firearm Safety Coalition, which was talked about earlier by Representative Buehler and Senator Steiner Hayward, in coalition with the Gunshot Project and Harvard University through Means Matter, also has excellent materials already in use since 2011. Suicide partnerships with gun owner groups have been established in 20 other states, including Washington, California, Colorado, New Hampshire, Tennessee, New York, Virginia, and others. Materials include tip sheets and brochures. Those are already available, and so we wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. We place information with prescriptions, especially when prescriptions are known to increase the risk of suicide. We simply place a sheet of information within the packet. We think that we can also just place information with a firearm when a firearm is being sold. And this is why Oregon urges you to change the bill to the original language requiring gun owners to provide suicide prevention and firearm safety information. Hundreds of Oregonians are at risk while we wait for this change. We really don't think that we have the time to wait. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Representative Buehler who asked for the change. It was Representative Buehler who asked for that change. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Frank Martin, John Woods, and Kevin Sterrett.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Sterrett, and I'm with the Oregon Firearms Federation. And I will have to say this bill very much is about guns. Earlier today in this room, the advocates of stricter gun regulations said that 60% of the suicides in this state are committed with things other than guns. But we're not addressing any of those. The proponents or actually the sponsors of this bill are both physicians, and yet we know the horrible rate of prescription drug abuse and people committing suicide with drugs. None of that's being addressed. None of that's being asked to be dealt with. We do not ask pharmacists or doctors to give out suicide prevention material. And to concentrate on just this one element, especially considering firearms dealers, they're not mental health professionals, they're firearms dealers. But as a Representative Post pointed out a little earlier, you know, we have state agencies have not demonstrated particularly good skills at doing this stuff. I just, you know, point you to what's been happening to foster children in this state. And one of my concerns when I saw the Dash 1 amendments, which I thought were a big improvement, certainly made the bill a lot less offensive, but that it would almost certainly face a situation where after 2 years or so, someone would say, well, this isn't working, let's make it mandatory. And based on the comments that we've heard from the advocates of this bill, that's exactly what they expect to have happen and hope to have happen. And we did hear a comment, I believe Representative Buehler said that the purchase of a gun makes you 50 times more likely to commit suicide in a week. I just wonder what that statistic means. I mean, you have no idea if someone's gonna commit suicide. It's 50 times greater than what? It's just a statistic that seems to me completely meaningless. Ultimately, it's very, very difficult for me to believe that in this environment, in this state, that a state department would produce suicide prevention material about just firearms that would not be heavily weighted as anti-gun propaganda at the taxpayer expense. Suicide prevention is very important. And I think everybody agrees with that. I know my life's been touched by it. Probably most people have. But we just haven't seen any indication that the Department of Justice, which certainly shouldn't be involved in this, or the Oregon Health Authority really understands this issue better than anybody else does. And so to selectively pick firearms, which are, based on the advocates of this bill, are used in less suicides than the fewer number of suicides, and not address anything else seems to me it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense in the grand scope of trying to reduce this very terrible thing. I also like to point out that in the original bill, unlike what was testified to just a few minutes ago, the gun dealer most certainly would be required. He couldn't just leave it out. If you look at line 15 in the bill, the gun dealer is required to ensure that the purchaser take possession of this material. And so while I think we all share the goal of reducing suicides, I would really like to see any suicide prevention effort expand to the prevention of the act itself. We heard statistics about how many people commit suicide in this state. What we didn't hear is how many of those people did it under our beloved assisted suicide law, which, you know, Oregon has legalized and embraced suicide. So while any statistic is too high, to ignore all these other ways to commit suicide and ask gun dealers, as you yourself pointed out, Chairman Barker, there are a lot of gun dealers that never meet their customers face-to-face. And so they may not be able to comply with this. And so once again, while we support the goal, we think that to concentrate this and demonize one object is not really suicide prevention so much as it is an attack on gun ownership. Thank you.
I would just point out that we didn't describe what that information would be. It would be suicide prevention information, not necessarily labeled to the gun.
But the bill requires firearm safety and suicide prevention. It's hard to believe that that
right.
would not
yeah,
deal right. with firearms.
Please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Barker, members of the committee. My name is Frank Martin. I hail from Gresham, Oregon, and I stand opposed to this bill just on the I'm not against trying to educate people about suicide, but when I read this bill, I kind of have some concerns. Mainly, the bill on line 8 says multiple versions of materials will be created. So we're not talking about one pamphlet based on something that's coming out of New Hampshire or some other organization. We're talking multiple, possibly in multiple languages. Then when you go further down on the bill, the gun dealer can actually just say, oh, here's a pamphlet. It could be in a language I can't even read, or it might be geared towards another cultural person within Oregon. So I'm kind of questioning the use of this kind of material in this program using taxpayer funds. And that's actually, to me, demonizing anybody who's even considering purchasing a firearm under Article 1, Section 27 of the Oregon State Constitution, as well as the Second Amendment. It's kind of labeling anybody even exercising that right that they're going to commit suicide. Otherwise, if the goal is to stop suicide, I understand it, but I think the details are kind of lacking in my opinion. That's only my opinion. I thank you for the time to testify against this bill.
Thank you for bringing your opinion down here. Mr. Woods.
Chairman Barker, my name is John Woods. I live in Beaverton. I've got two grandsons, one 18, one 15, two Eagle Scouts, two exemplary kids. But the reason I came here today is that I would really like to make your life uncomfortable. Because this thing of rural Oregon losing logging jobs, mining jobs, ranching jobs, and everything, these kids have nothing out there. What are they going to do? They have no vocational education coming down the line. I mean, some of them I talk to, and they say, I'm out of high school. Now what? I've had four kids that I know personally have hung themselves within the last month, and they just got out of high school. They just started their life. So my question is what are we doing here? These kids need help. We need to spend the money on the kids to give them the vocation, to build the welders, the electricians, the plumbers, and the people who are not going to college. They're the ones that are falling through the cracks. Think about it. They will never own a house. They will never be out of debt. They will never give anything to their kids. It's heart-wrenching to watch some of these kids. They don't know where they're going. They don't know what they're going to do. We need to get the industries to start supporting these kids through programs. We need to start supporting these kids. We need to start looking at rural Oregon. I heard some statistics here, like 6% in Multnomah County and 13, 14, 15% out in the rural counties. We got a problem. And they're taking firearms and everything. We got a problem out in the rural counties. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. And there are other bills requiring apprenticeships on construction jobs so we get more young people into those trades. That are, mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your testimony. John Grandstaff, Bill Watson, and Irene Gilbert. Please go ahead and start.
Irene Gilbert, LeGrand, Oregon. Thank you, Representative Barker and members of this committee for hearing me speak today. We own a gun store in LeGrand, Oregon, and I believe that not every issue requires a bill to go through this legislature, and I do not believe that this bill is necessary, and I hate to see agencies spend their time and money to address it, I guess. There are currently available excellent gun safety classes through both the NRA, the local sheriff's offices, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I heard comments about making this voluntary. I think voluntary is a good thing. So my suggestion would be, why don't the people who are concerned about this contact these organizations that are currently sanctioning gun safety classes and ask them to voluntarily include some material on suicide in the classes that are already being offered. Rather than create a new set of information, I would suggest, and I hate to suggest anything that might become mandatory, but I do believe it would be a positive thing if any gun dealer would post at least one phone number for a contact to access the existing training courses that are in their areas. I know at our gun store, we currently provide that information to customers, and we really encourage first-time gun purchasers to attend one of those classes. They are excellent, and they are currently offered often. And as long as this Senate Bill 764 doesn't pass requiring 25 live ammunition shots to be included, I'm guessing that the classes will continue to be easily accessible. I am concerned that if that does pass, that it will be difficult to get to these classes. People currently enjoy the classes. They provide a lot of good information. And it seems to me that it would be much more effective to include this information in the existing classes that are already well received. I question that the NRA or other groups would have a real problem with including some information on suicide in their gun safety classes. I took the class for the second time about a year ago and found it educational and enjoyable. While I really have a problem with government mandates, I kind of hate to even suggest requiring a posting of a number, but we do it, and we do it verbally, and I think it really would be a good idea for that information to be easily accessible at gun stores. Suicide prevention is a positive goal, but it should address suicide in all its forms, not just related to guns.
Thank you, Ms. Thank Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, distinguished members of the committee. My name is Phil Watson with the Firearms Policy Coalition. And I first want to start off with, on a personal note, I've dealt with a lot of actual survivors of suicide because I was a VA work study on the GI Bill, and I was the first person that they would come see when they would check into the mental health wing at American Lake up in Washington State. So I've dealt with a lot of folks that were, suicidal folks who have attempted suicide. And I just want to address a few issues here. This is really, on the big picture, this isn't necessarily just a firearms issue. It's a societal issue. We've got a lot of other ways that people inflict harm on themselves. The highest rate is actually drugs among the youth population. That needs to be addressed as well. these studies, I'd like to speak to that for just briefly, and that's what raises my concern with this bill, mainly giving the football to a state agency and opening the Pandora's box, if you will, to whatever they want to put out, however much they want to spend on it, creating, you know, a bunch of different positions to do whatever they want to do without oversight. It was referred to up in Washington State that we have a program up there. The program has veto power from the Second Amendment advocacy community. I don't see anything in this bill like that at all. Also, I'd like to address the supposed national ban on research, suicide prevention and firearms research. There is no ban on suicide prevention or firearms research on the National Health Institute. My friend, Dr. Tim Wheeler from California, actually testified during those hearings in the 1990s, and the ban was on propaganda, if you will, because the money was being abused and spent in places it wasn't supposed to be. And so those are really the warning signs I see with this bill. It's mainly only geared towards firearms purchasers. If people want to pass out the NSSF flyers, I have no problem with that. NSSF is a great organization. But what we're really not addressing is the bigger societal issues. We look at Japan, and you can see that they do have a very big suicide rate there, and they're not allowed to own firearms at all. So I'd be more than happy to talk to any member of this committee or member of this body on how to address these issues. I've dealt with it personally, and I'm on both sides of this issue, having dealt with it in a hospital and on the other side with Second Amendment advocacy. So I can offer some possibly unique insights on this, based on my experience that you might not hear other places. So feel free to contact me. I'll give you my information.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is John Grandstaff, and I appreciate you hearing me today. I appreciate all of your servitude. I really do. Even though a few of you have questionable voting records, I do really appreciate it. It's a touchy subject. It's a very touchy subject, suicide. How can I say that I'm against this bill and still be for suicide prevention? And I would say that it's implication. This bill essentially vilifies guns, gun owners, and small business owners who sell guns, because it only focuses on the gun part of it. Like it's been stated previously, there are many suicides, predominantly so, that are done by other methods, drugs being one of them. And I do appreciate that there's an amendment here that's voluntary. That does go a long way to kind of stem the tide of this implication that this bill puts out there. A couple of things I want to address here were, someone mentioned 50 times higher suicide rate when purchased a gun. And I would like to think, what about the suicide rate after somebody purchases a knife or rope or prescription drugs? I mean, is there a study for that? So, again, it just seems like it's one of those things where it's vilifying the purchase of the firearm, the gun dealer, the owner of the firearm. And again, the implication that anybody who buys a gun is suicidal. I would mention that we do have a high suicide rate here, but millions of gun owners did not commit suicide yesterday, and millions of gun owners won't commit suicide today. And that kind of speaks to, if we're going to include gun dealers in this bill, we need to include pharmacies, hardware stores, any shop that sells knives, because those are also methods for committing suicide. Otherwise, this bill, even without it being mandatory for gun dealers to issue these pamphlets, it still only goes to vilify the gun shops and the small business owners, and negatively affect the gun culture. And which I'd like to speak about, gun culture isn't like you see in the movies where it's all about shooting up and cowboys and stuff like that. It's a very controlled, self-reliance type culture. And if anybody is if anybody, if any group of people care more about preventing suicide, I would have to say that it's people within the gun culture. And I'm steeped in the gun culture, I grew up in the gun culture. And so I can speak to that. So I do really care about preventing suicides because it is a big issue. But I don't believe that this bill goes to promote that. I think it only goes to vilify those groups of people. So thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Questions?
Thank you very much, panel. And I'll call last Douglas Brown, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Douglas Brown. I'm here on my own behalf. I've been a police officer in the state of Oregon for over 20 years. I'm also a paramedic, and I've been around gun deaths. I've been around suicide. I know three people personally in the last 3 months who have committed suicide. If any kind of regulation towards guns would reduce suicide, we would find that in statistics from places that have made laws. You'd find that in Japan, which doesn't allow guns, and yet their suicide rate is higher than ours. I'm certainly in favor of mental health treatment, looking for people who are at risk, no question about that. But if you focus on the gun, it will fail. We continually make regulations focused on guns around the country. We have thousands of gun control laws, and 2 or 3 years later, when you ask for evidence of a reduction in crime, you don't find it. And then the proponents say, well, we need a stronger bill, we need more bills. So while I certainly support funds being spent to deal with suicide issues, you might have some success. The three people I know who died in the last 3 months, two of them had been planning it for some time. Neither one quite qualified for physician-assisted suicide. But they had clearly made their minds up they were going to do it. If they didn't do it with a gun, they would have done it some other way. The third person came as a shock to all of us. None of us saw it coming. There's no way that could have been anticipated or prevented. For whatever reason he chose to do it, he did it. So I would encourage you to focus on mental health issues and move away from making the gun be the issue, because that's doomed to failure. It, as a police officer, I don't see that working. Our big crime death problem in Oregon is gang-on-gang violence. That's our overwhelming number of criminal gun deaths in this state, and we're doing very little about that. Every week in the paper in the Oregonian, you will see gun deaths in the Gresham, Portland area, and I don't see us addressing that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2526 and roll it over till tomorrow, since we don't have the paperwork to move it yet. Okay, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2812.
Mr. Chair, work session, right?
Work session on House Bill 2812.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee heard House Bill 2812 with the -2 amendments on April 12th. The -2 amendment requires the Department of Education to establish regional school safety teams to provide training and support to school districts on issues involving violence and self-harm. With the -2 amendment, House Bill 2812 has no revenue impact. It does, however, have a fiscal impact, requiring the addition of a referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I move the -2 amendments into House Bill 2812.
Representative Williamson moves the -2 amendments into House Bill 2812. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2812 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2812 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation with a referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Open a work session on House.
I'm going to close that work session.
Oh,
you did. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Opening work session, House Bill 3380.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, heard House Bill 3380 on April 5th. The bill modifies the eligibility requirements applicable to the Family Sentencing Alternative Pilot Program. The Dash 2 amendment clarifies that if the court imposes a downward dispositional departure based on eligibility for the program, the court must require the defendant to participate in the program. The Dash 2, like the Dash 1, also eliminates the ability of the Department of Corrections to provide a sentence reduction. With the Dash 2 amendment, House Bill 3380 has no revenue impact and a negative fiscal impact. As a result, the committee may rescind the subsequent referral to your Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 3380.
Representative Williams moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 3380. Any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Just make a motion to rescind. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I move to rescind the referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Williamson moves to rescind the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3380 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3380 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Williamson will be the courier. And everything else we're going to have to roll over to tomorrow to wait for the paperwork to catch up. So, committee's adjourned. Thank you, committee. Committee's adjourned. Thank you, committee.